A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the Science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that. You gotta say it like Science!
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone right when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all-age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling, but she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs, but Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y, Star Trek, science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the IF anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
If that sounds like something you'd be interested in, go and check out the link in the show notes that will take you to the Kickstarter. Now on to the episode. Welcome to episode 501 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cal Thursday episode, and I'm here with one of the writers for a new series coming out from Top Cal in October. He's been on the show before. It's my pleasure to welcome back Ryan Caddy to the show. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me back. I'm excited to talk about Infinite Dark.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. I got the preview copy along with Freeze at San Diego this year, and I've been jonesing, man. I'm ready. I'm ready. So,
Good. That's what I want. I'm glad.
Yeah. It's like,
wait, man, no longer.
Yeah. I got about it was about half the first issue in there.
It's a little more than half, actually. I think It's through page 14. So
yeah, I was like, need the rest now.
Just enough to get them hooked.
Yeah, exactly. Why don't you give our listeners an idea of what, Infinite Darkness is all about?
Sure. Infinite Dark is a sci-fi horror series, kind of like in the vein of Alien or Event Horizon. The premise is basically that the universe ends, but humanity manages to survive in a special ship called the Orpheus. And so we're kind of subsisting for reasons that are not worth going into in like the sort of summary. There are not nearly as many people as there should be on board this ship, so it's kind of got the feel of a big ghost town. And we're following these survivors as they've been sort of existing in the void nothingness between universes for about 2 years. And our story takes off, you know, 2 years after the end of the universe, and the first murder on this station's history occurs. And we follow this woman, Dava Carell, who is the security director for the station, sort of our Ellen Ripley character, and her investigation into the murder and sort of the otherworldly nature of the murder.
Yeah, and I think I called it Infinite Darkness. Apologies. Yeah, Infinite Dark, and this idea
of... Apology unaccepted. not accepted. You're done. the title's actually... the title's a Sandman reference, actually, because I'm a big dork, and I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan. And there's a point in Volume 1 where Dream is, like, talking about, like, things that are going on in his realm in Sandman. And he's like, ah, all that's outside of my realm is infinite dust, infinite dark. And I'm like, oh.
So you mentioned, so obviously there's a scientific aspect to it. We'll touch on a little more.
Sure.
With the kind of the heat death of the universe. And a lot of listeners may not know what that is, but you mentioned like a supernatural and a horror feel as well. So maybe there's more going on than just this scientific theory of the end of the universe. So what's the tone that you're trying to capture here? Are you trying to make it scary?
Yeah, I'm definitely doing my best. You know, horror is my favorite genre. Ideally, almost everything I write would be somewhere in the horror spectrum. So with Infinite Dark, especially, while its tone is somewhat grim, I'm going for sort of like a tense, bleak. It's supposed to spook you out a little bit, and there's definitely elements to the story that I don't want to spoil anything. It seems supernatural.
And you mentioned so
it's not purely sci-fi. So,
yeah, but the reason I mention it is because you yourself mentioned Alien, and that to me is maybe the perfect example ever of mixing horror, you know, taut drama, suspense with you know, futuristic science. You know, setting this idea of this monster and this you know, set in space in the future. And it's kind of tapping into that unknown, right? Like, we've pretty much explored this planet, but imagine what monsters could be waiting for us out there in the infinite dark, right?
Exactly. Hey.
So other than Alien, are there any other kind of inspirations along that line that you're pulling from?
You know, I mean, Alien is the one I always go back to because I saw that movie when I was very young, and it really sort of took hold of me. It's one of my top 5-10 movies of all time. But, you know, I definitely think, you know, fans of the genre will kind of like, they'll recognize elements of Event Horizon or the Dead Space games, or even like hopefully some kind of like Twilight Zone-y stuff, that sort of thing. If I've done my job right.
See, I'm glad to hear you. I specifically was wondering about Event Horizon because for me, that's like one of my top 3 scariest movies of all time.
And really? Okay. Yeah, I've been hearing that a lot, and it's more and more that I've talked about the book. And there's definitely, it's funny, after the pitch got accepted, I went and rewatched Event Horizon so to make sure that nothing I wrote was too similar, because I know there's kind of a similar premise at work. So I had to go and change a couple things and make sure it didn't steal too much or align too similarly.
You know, I hadn't seen that movie since like mid to late 90s, and a friend, we were talking about it one day, and he's like, oh, I have it, I'll let you borrow it. I'm like, okay, yeah. I was all excited, I hadn't seen it in so long. So I borrowed the DVD from him, and I put it in, and I played it for like 5 minutes, and I was like, why would I watch this again on purpose? This stuff's too scary. And I turned it off, gave it back to him. I never did.
Oh, that's the fun thing.
I never did watch it. Let's talk a little more about this idea of the heat death of the universe. There may not be a lot of people that understand it. And it has to do with this theory of thermodynamics that right now in our universe, if you study physics, you know everything tends toward entropy, towards chaos. And the heat death of the universe doesn't really have anything to do with temperature. It has to do actually with getting to the point where there's a thermodynamic balance. So then, like, basically chemical reactions would stop. And life as we know it would stop. So it's actually this idea that we've achieved balance, which most of the time when you think about achieving balance, that's a good thing. Here, not so much. So what is it about this theory of the heat death of the universe of balance that kind of intrigued you and made you choose it to be like the starting point of the story?
It's kind of funny that you use the phrase achieving balance, because that is something that kind of comes up later on in the series without spoiling anything. I've been terrified of the heat death of the universe since I learned about it in high school physics. I'm terrified of death, I think, as any sane person should be. But, you know, for me, there's always been this kind of comfort in the idea that, well, humans could survive. You know, we could build and expand forever, and our descendants and things that evolved from us could populate the entire universe and subsist for millennia, you know, forever even. And then I learned about the heat death of the universe that, you know, even if you did everything right as a species, even if you did everything right as a galaxy, even if you did everything right as a universe, you couldn't prevent this time, this death, this clock running down. And that scared the hell out of me. So I was like, well, why not use that as the backdrop?
Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to scare somebody, because it honestly scares me too, because like you said, we can do everything right, but eventually you reach this equilibrium, and then all of a sudden, like, what, there's nothing that we can do. It's completely beyond our control. And again, that paradox of thinking as balance of an equilibrium, you know, equality, something good, but it leads to the death of the human race nearly in your story. And I like that paradox too. As you start your story, right, it's a beginning, but it's also an ending, because life as we know it is done. And it really seems like some of your characters, is it Deva? Is that how you?
Yeah, Deva, yes.
Yeah. She's kind of the head of security on the station. And she struggles with the fact, like, why did I deserve to survive? Mm-hmm. So it's such a great dichotomy and a great starting point, again, because it's coming out of this ending.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I started writing the story. I put the pitch together and everything when I was in a very, very rough place in my life. And I started active scripting as I was kind of working my way out of that. So there's kind of like the weird parallel there that just sort of kind of happened organically. But for Deva, this idea, you know, the reason I want to explore the survivor's guild is this notion, for all the characters, not just for her, but she's sort of our central focus, is this idea that survival is a kind of virtue, right? Like to fight on and endure the unimaginable horrors of the end of the universe to still survive. That is a virtuous thing. That's an honorable thing. And you shouldn't feel guilty about that, and kind of having her work through that.
Yeah. It's such an interesting concept. It's like in your brain, you may be consciously aware of it. And I'm speaking from experience here. I was in a terrible car accident at one point in my life, and not everybody made it, you know, and I struggled with that for, you know, a long time. Like in my head, logically, I can make sense of it like all day long. But when it comes to your emotions, you don't always have control over that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And also we see Deva as she has to, you know, she's navigating her own kind of internal struggle. But at the same time, because humans are inherently political, mm-hmm. You know, there's some truth to that. We're all individual, we're all separate, but we have to coexist. So automatically it brings in relationships and politics. And even at the end of the universe here, we see that Deva is not immune to that, right? We're still seeing politics at work with her and the other members of the board, so to speak, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, ultimately, even in the ideal best case, politics is people trying to come together and do what they feel is best. And there's never going to be a perfect collectivization. And I think that especially in a situation, you know, it'd be great if when the shit's hitting the fan and, you know, literally outside the walls is permanent death for everything, if people could just come together and agree on everything. But you know, that's never going to be the case. And, you know, now that the panic has kind of dropped a little bit, there's this growing tension between these people, you know, the board, specifically, Lynn Tennant, who she is like the project manager for the entire, station in general. And she was in charge of the project before it launched, and she and Deva butt heads the most, but, there's just sort of ultimately, even in the background for every minor character you meet, there's this, you know, the shame of it is that they can't work together. There's a line I have from Deva in the first issue where she's thinking about this murder that's occurred in issue one. And she's like, it's so sickening. Like there's 2,000 souls left. Like we're up against nothing. Like, how can you take a life in that context? You know, but you know, you can extrapolate that a little bit. How can we be sitting in a room arguing about politics? Well, politics preserve those lives. So
I don't know. Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, all murder is heinous, but especially in this situation, there's so few left. It's like, man, you know, hanging on by a thread. Don't push your luck.
Right. Exactly. Well, it's like, what do you do when you catch the murderer? You can't give him the death penalty. That's, you know, there's so few people, you know? So.
Yeah. And it also opens up, another thing that I didn't put on the talking points, but, it's so interesting because you do have so few people left, but everybody, as you said, is kind of in the same boat, so to speak, with, you know, Oblivion just on the other side of the bulkhead. And with only 2,000 souls, I mean, you really could spin this out into its own kind of shared universe, so to speak, of all these stories. You really could. Okay, so how does an engineer deal with it? How does a mother deal with it? How does a young child deal with it? How does somebody who is, because eventually you hope these people are going to procreate.
Right.
And so, how do you deal with what are the stories of the people that are born on the station and know nothing different? You really have created, I don't know, intentionally or not, this petri dish almost of story, right? Where you can tell all these unique tales, and everybody will have a little bit of the same starting point, the same reference point, because they're all in the same place. But you bring your experiences to that and allows you to tell unique stories. Have you thought about that at all? Any plans for that?
Well, I mean, that kind of depends on some future stuff. I've got plans for the next two arcs, and the idea of doing something like that is really attractive to me, and I'd like to do things like that, but it's getting some plot stuff out of the way. It's interesting to me that you bring that up, that idea of perspective, because right, like that difference in perspective is the core element of character, but that also like ties into what you're talking about, like the political difference and conflict even here at the end of the universe. It's, you know, it's like, why do people have different ideas in war and in any sort of trouble? And that's sort of like what makes for the conflict and makes the story interesting is these differences of perspective that everybody has. And so I do want to explore that a lot as moving forward. Just because Deva is kind of the point of view character doesn't mean that she is the only point of view we get to see.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily mean that her point of view that we as a reader will agree with it or she's right.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, that kind of, I don't think you have to agree with the character to love them. Right.
Right.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, a compelling character is because you can understand them. Doesn't mean you agree. There are some. I think that is it a line from one of the Christopher Nolan Batman movies? Some men just want to see the world burn. You know?
Yeah, it's from Dark Knight. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely understand that. It doesn't mean I like the. You know, it doesn't mean I agree with the Joker's perspective. But I understand it completely. Let's talk about your artist on the series, Andrew Moody, who I know from Port of Earth. Mm-hmm. His art here in the preview, it looked so much more polished and kind of the more visceral look on Port of Earth. So what's the collaboration been like between the two of you?
So I met Andrea. I mean, we'd known each other like online and stuff, but I met him for the first time at New York Comic Con 2 or 3 years ago. And we had been talking about doing something together, you know, off and on. And he walks up to me, and I didn't mean to meet him. I bumped into him. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's great to meet you. And he's like, hey, and he's like, we should get together a project. And he goes, let me show you some new samples. And he takes out a FedEx, like a thin FedEx box, just full of original art. And he's just like pulling out original art pages, just like with reckless abandon on the show floor. And of course, they're fucking amazing pages. He showed me some stuff from Prometheus, especially like the Alien Prometheus book that Dark Horse did. And I saw those pages and I was like, I'd been at that point, I'd been talking to him about like a fantasy thing and some other stuff. And I was like, oh, fuck that, dude. We got to do a sci-fi book together. And so we talked about it. I kind of like sent him the general pitch. I'd had ideas kind of in this vein before, and I sort of like put it all together and sent it his way, and he was really enthusiastic. The thing about Andrea Hamuti is he might be the most enthusiastic man in comics. Every email, every text is just like exclamation points and emojis and just like so much like gung-ho, like, yeah, man, we're going to go for like 3 more arcs. Oh, yeah, this is the best. You're amazing. You know, this is so great. We're doing so great. Like, he's just so uplifting and enthusiastic, which was very, very helpful in the early stages. I mean, it's always great, but, you know.
Yeah, where specifically, and I mean, you probably had an idea of what you wanted the book to look like in terms of tone and, you know, visual and color. But, you know, I know you've worked on projects in the past as a writer, done a lot of work as an editor. So I know that you are, you're aware of the fact that, hey, what I really need to do though is sometimes sit back and let, like Andrea do what he does, you know, take advantage of that creativity. So, was there anything that he like really put his stamp on when it came to like the visuals?
I mean, you know, honestly, he designed the station, you know, and that has actually informed the plot. Like I gave him vague details about what I wanted the Orpheus to look like, and he built a model and sketched it up and drew it. And that model, I was like, oh, okay, this is like, it changed plot elements for me, and some pretty big ones actually. Because I was like, oh, the way you've drawn it, it makes sense that certain things would take place in other places and stuff like that. He's really sort of, it's funny, you're right, his stuff is far more polished, but I think that like weirdly, it's, you know, it fits for the sterile space station environment, but that weirdly almost makes it stronger when we pop into scenes where someone's dead or something's blowing up or there's conflict. It's really awesome to see him like shift back into that visceral Port of Earth style. But the collaboration has been excellent. I tend to sort of, just as a creator, I tend to like trust the artist. Ideally, they know what to draw way better than I do. The only time he won't be mad. This is a funny story. The only time we've ever had any conflict was he turned in a splash page for a scene, and as you know, it's, you know, Infinite Dark, the universe has ended. There's nothing out there. It's just pure void. And he turns in the splash page, and it has the space station floating, and then there's all these stars and like nebula and stuff. And I'm like, Andrea, you know that there's nothing, you can't, those can't be there. It's blackness. Like, you can't draw that. And he goes, oh yeah, I know. And he pauses and he goes, but it'll look so much cooler as an original art piece if the stars are there. He goes, we'll fix it digitally later. Oh man.
That's awesome. I did notice, in the preview that I got, mm-hmm. that, there is, on the last page of the preview where it shifts locations in the station. And I did notice, oh, that Andrea used a little bit of a different style. It's a little looser there. And I immediately evoked like a different feel. So
He's really good about channeling those tone shifts. He's a spectacular talent.
Yeah. So that's another reason that I just can't wait for more. And I think the first issue comes out Wednesday, October 10th. Does that sound correct?
Yes, it's Wednesday, October 10th. But if people are at New York Comic Con, I will have advanced copies and an exclusive cover to sell there. So.
Oh, awesome. And when is the final order cutoff? So if any of our listeners want to let their retailers know, there's still time to order it, correct?
Yes, they have until this coming Monday to order the book. So the 17th. The 17th is the final order cutoff.
Okay, so there you go, listeners. Let your retailers know that you want to get your hands on this book.
Every single pre-order of Infinite Dark staves off the end of the universe by at least 1 year. So, you know, that's all I'm saying.
There you go. Right. And the other thing that we always say on the podcast is that there's nothing you can do that's more beneficial for your retailer than let them know that you're interested in a book, because the shelves are crowded these days. So if you want to be sure to get it, help yourself out, help your retailer out, make sure you pre-order it. I don't want to take up too much of your time, Ryan. I know you're busy, but I do want to ask you just one more question. This story feels very big in terms of scope and the setting and you know, the visuals, incredible visuals by Andrea in the preview that I've seen. Is it more challenging to tell a story that's so big like this as opposed to some of your previous work where it's a little smaller in scale, a little more intimate?
Well, you know, it's my first creator-owned, my first published creator-owned. You know, I have other stuff in the works, and there have been shifts and movement and stuff, but this is my first fully published creator-owned work. And you know, it is big, and I think it's ambitious, but maybe not because of the scale, you know, because ultimately it's these people trapped on this station, and for all the big bombastic, horrible, epic, nightmarish stuff going on, it's a small group of people stuck in this last place. Not to get too personal about the part or too parting of the kimono or whatever, but you know, I kind of started doing this work on this book when I was in a really, really bad place. I was in the worst depression of my life. And I know lots of the creators talk about like working through the pain or whatever with an artwork. And it wasn't necessarily like that. I sort of was like working on myself and getting out of stuff as I finally started working on the book. And so rather than like directly therapeutic, I guess it's been kind of cathartic. And I guess the ambition there is to try and look back into that place of the person who pitched the book, and also of the sort of bleak, grim, awful stuff hanging over the heads of all these people on the station. Because you're going to have a little PTSD at the very least, living right through that kind of thing. And kind of reach back into that, and also show how you can get to a better place and manage the bad things that happen, and the anxiety and the depression and the survivor's guilt and all those horrible things. And like I said, channel that notion of survival as a virtue and that path to moving on to being better and feeling better. So my ambition is to capture that and make it scary. So, and good, I guess.
Well, I mean, it looks better than good. It looks great so far. So
thank you. It'll look good. So no matter what I do, Andrea will make it look good. So.
Yeah. I mean, you got to hang on to some of that angst. Keeps you sharp, you know, like in heat, you know, he talks about that. Hang on to my angst, keeps me sharp. But don't hang on to it too tight, man. You're
absolutely.
You're a good guy, and we don't want you tumbling down that rabbit hole.
I appreciate it. I'm in a much better place now, which is part of the process also. So
awesome. Well, are there any other projects that you want to tease that you can mention here?
What can I tease? I've got an OGN in the works, and I've got a webcomic in the works, but I don't know if I can talk about either of those. One is a horror book. It's another horror. The webcomic is a horror thing. And then the OGN is kind of like a Mad Max kind of adventure-y type book. That's a weird mashup too, but that's what it is. and then a couple other more secret things actually that I'm very, very excited about, but I can't even drop details on because they are above my pay grade.
Yeah, and then I think the last time we had you on was to talk about Warframe, and that's actually had the trade come out recently, right?
Yes.
So that's available as well, listeners, if you want to go and check that out.
And you can also, my big thing is that my first Marvel work came out last week. So that's the Old Man Logan annual. I did a Punisher War or Wasteland Journal backup story in there. So that's my Marvel debut.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations again on that. That's just
so thanks, man.
And if any of our listeners want to follow along and know when these secret projects are able to be announced, where's the best place to find you online?
Twitter is where I'm most active in comic book stuff. I'm at RyKady. That's RYCady. And my Instagram handle is the same thing, but Instagram is mostly just me taking dumb selfies and eating a lot of really gross food. So not as helpful for the comic book stuff.
Yeah, I have to say, you do eat some weird stuff.
I you know, I try my best. I don't know if you know, like my first real published writing work was for the OC Weekly. And I did a column called "We Eat It So You Don't Have To," and so I've tried to continue that spirit into my life as I've moved on.
Well, that's awesome. Again, listeners, April 10th for Infinite Dark. Let your
October. October.
October. Sorry, October. What did I say?
Man, you said April. You are time traveling.
Oh my God. No. Well, maybe that's the date for the trade.
Actually, that might be the date for the trade. Actually.
Okay, listeners, so October 10th, but let your retailers know now. Give them a call as soon as the podcast is over, or next time you stop in the shop to pick up your books, let them know to make sure to hold a copy for you. Trust me, you're going to want to check out this title. It's really great. So thanks for taking the time to talk to me, Ryan. It's always great to catch up.
No, thanks so much. I love coming on. I really appreciate you helping out and helping me promote the book. Let's hope they like it.
Yeah, definitely. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. The next show I'll be at for sure is Comic-Con LA, coming up Halloween weekend in Los Angeles, California. I think I've mentioned before, I do have a press pass for New York. I just don't know if I'm going to be able to get the time off from the day job. I really want to go, but we'll see. So if you're going to be at LA Comic Con, definitely let me know. I always love to meet up with listeners and hook you up with free goodies. And I'll definitely keep everybody updated on New York Comic Con if I'm able to make it. So once again, thanks for joining me, Ryan.
Hey, thanks so much for having me as always.
And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks again. Adios.